You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Van Morrison. My hetero life partner standing by. The man who always walks on the bright side of the road, Kim Holmes. What is up, big man?
Good morning, man.
How are you?
Got news for you.
What's
the
that?
Nationals are 2-0.
How about that? But my Nationals.
Your Nationals, yeah. Yours and mine.
Actually, I picked them to win the World Series in the Major League Baseball pool.
That would be sweet. Maybe the Dodgers organization are watching and learning. I
no,
doubt it.
Sorry, bro.
They were in L.A., so, but anyway. I do have an announcement, though. I've got hired by Hal Gershman as a consultant for his new steakhouse.
Ooh.
Harry's on Demers. You remember that law office right beside the Empire Arts Theater?
Okay, I'm walking the Empire in the front entrance. Which way, left or right? Because to the right's a corner, so to
it's
the left?
Owned by the, that crazy lawyer.
Which one?
Used to sue everybody. Hal owns that building. It's attached physically to the Empire. So it's on the 6th and Demers.
Now, just so everybody knows, Hal Gershman, born and raised in Grand Forks, North Dakota. His father owned started a liquor store called Happy Harry's, and his dad was a huge presence in the city. Hal grew up right, and then took over the business. When I was on the Grand Forks City Council and living in Grand Forks, Hal was on the city council. He was hugely instrumental in the city's recovery after the flood, which they get extremely high marks for. And, he's a friend of mine. He spent some time out here in California. I know his daughter lives out here in Los Angeles. And, and he's a good guy, and he was always a huge fan of Kim's and Kim's restaurant. And so that's cool, man. What's it feel like to be a big time high paid consultant?
Yeah, I don't know about the high paid, but I'm absolutely very excited to be back in the business.
Boom.
In this capacity, not cooking.
So what are you going to do? What is your capacity then?
We're setting up the kitchen.
Right.
We met with the architects earlier this week.
Ooh.
And then I'm going to be involved in hiring the kitchen staff and the wait staff and training them in the Sanders way, like your son.
Johnny Boy. Listen to this. Johnny Boy, right, yes. Kim's hetero life son, my son, John, he is going to school at an Army base, Fort Benning, Georgia, the Army's infantry school. And its school is called MCCC. What happened was, he applied to go to this like large urban warfare symposium that the Army was putting on in Manhattan.
Yeah.
John's no fool, right? So he gets told, yeah, Marines don't go to that. He's like, all right, well, I'll put my name in anyway. Well, they said he could go. So now he starts sending pictures to Patrick and I.
Yeah.
So the first one is from, we see is from Madison Square Garden. He's like, the Rangers are playing, right? And like, are you kidding me? Like, and he had great seats. Where did you get those tickets? StubHub, man. He goes, I love rolling with the Army. This is awesome. So the next day, he's sending us pictures taken out of a helicopter that's flying over Manhattan. He's got pictures of Yankee Stadium. He's got pictures of the Empire State Building. And it's not like a tourist helicopter, right? It's a military helicopter. So he's sitting at the side door, right? And they're not having to fly normal routes and stuff. They're flying like military stuff around the city, you know, police stuff. And I'm like, what are you doing? Then he sends a picture of him at Madison Square Garden again for a Knicks game. And I'm like, dude, you've never watched a basketball game in your life. He goes, I know, but this is awesome.
I used to love Madison Square Gardens. I saw many events there.
Oh, let me tell you, man. New York City, you know, is the best, right? Taking the subway, everybody, you know, everybody on it together, heading to the venue, the whole vibe of New York and Manhattan is cool. So, no, my favorite. So, yeah. So, John has been bouncing around New York City. He's like, he's still like, I love the Army so much, it's ridiculous. I said, yeah, the Army wins. We lose, but the Army, they win. He's like, they do, man. They do. This has been fun. I'm like, yeah. So, yeah, he's been there. So anyway, so, congratulations. That's awesome. And best of all, though, is you're getting to do it with Hal, who's good people. So,
yeah, and working with him, he's got enough green energy to make this a really classy joint.
Well, that's I didn't know if I should say that, but Hal, he's done all right for himself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the biggest problem that small businesses have, and mine is certainly one of them, is, you know, the capital required to do what you want to do. And Hal can make that,
I think he's going to make it happen. And I get input in, the design a little bit, changing a few things around with the architect this week. It was very exciting for me. And, you know, to have an opportunity to, start another restaurant, without having the worries of paying for it.
Nice.
It's pretty cool. And, Hal wants to do it upright, and so it will be. And I'm thrilled to be a part of it.
Well, congratulations. What kind of food is it going to be?
It's going to be steaks, all kinds of steaks, you know, from porterhouse down to short ribs, and everything in between. We're going to. I suggested do rotisseries and have rotisserie chickens, and then you can do a pork roast rotisserie, you know, with the chickens, but on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And then salmon, the walleye, which is the big round here, and walleye the way I did it at Sanders, because they don't do it that way anymore. At Skies for some ungodly known reason, but do that, and you know, maybe get some tuna from Honolulu Fish and oysters, Rockefellers. It's just some fun stuff, and not a whole big, huge menu with too many options like I had. So the food costs will be down, and we'll have some control over what goes out the window.
That's cool. That's cool. When is any timeline for opening? Is that open-ended, or is that
now,
for public discussion?
It's just a gutted building right now. And they're going to raise up the roof about 3 or 4 feet, I think probably my guess would be this spring or June. That's our spring.
Right.
June, maybe July. I'm not sure. It just depends on how long they take to build it. Todd Innes Construction is doing the work. You know Todd.
I don't think I do, but well, that's good. That's good. What else is going on? Give us a weather report. I've been following the weather.
I woke up this morning. It was, I think, around 32 degrees.
Nice.
I'm sitting in the living room in my boxers.
There you go.
And a t-shirt.
There you go. Well, that's good. That means the heat works.
Yeah.
It was 89 degrees in my living room last night at 7 o'clock.
God bless you. You're lucky.
We're having a Santa Ana, man. It was 91, like, most of the day with the winds. Normally come out of the west, off the ocean. Well, now they're coming off the desert out of the east, and it's a tad warm. So, last night.
It's that kind of weather. It's going to be in the 40s most of the week in the afternoon, or this weekend. And then sometime next week, I think the bottom's going to start to drop.
But you can still get a mix into about what, halfway through November, and then it goes cold, and then after the first of the year, then it gets pretty cold. It keeps the riffraff out, so that's why we love it up there.
Yeah, and it is sun's out. It's clear sky. It's kind of false hope if you're inside looking out. Oh, it's going to be nice today.
There's things that happened to me in North Dakota that I had never experienced in my life. You can go outside with your hair wet and it freezes. And all of a sudden you're like, what is that? What happened? And you touch your hair and it's frozen. You're like, what? The other thing is, if you have, moisture when it gets really cold, when there's moisture, right, in your nostrils, and when it gets below zero, your nose hairs freeze.
Yeah. it sure do.
Things that you never had happen in your life start happening to you, and you're like, what is going on with this stuff, man? This is crazy, crazy, crazy.
And when it gets really cold, you can step out your back porch and throw a bucket of water in the air, and it's all frozen by the time it hits the ground.
I never did that. I saw videos of people doing that, but it's the opposite of cracking the egg on the sidewalk and watching the egg fry. This is a different version of that. And when it gets cold. I used to have these mechanics on Thursday when I did my radio show up there, and I loved it, honestly. They were fun guys, and I would always give my opinion. They would answer, and I would say, I know the answer to that. And do you have a remote car starter, first of all? The remote car starter was the first question in everything that went wrong with the electrical system.
Yeah.
My window won't go down. Do you have a remote control starter? Yes. Okay. But the mechanic said, and he's a great guy. His name is Ray Franks. And he's a North Dakota, Minnesota guy, and he's a fun guy. But he's a great mechanic. And so we were talking about wind chill. And he said, okay, look, I know everybody else is going to tell me I'm crazy, right? Because wind chill doesn't apply to vehicles, right? It doesn't apply to metal. It's a measure of wind across the skin and what you feel, right?
Yes.
right? Machines aren't supposed to feel that. And then he said, but I'm going to tell you that they do. And we got into this big discussion about, he said, look, I'll tell you. He said, go ahead and just do an experiment. The next time it's really cold and windy, right, park your car so it's shielded from the wind, okay, and see what happens. Then the next night, park your car so it's facing the wind and exposed so it gets the full blast, and watch the difference. He said cars feel wind chill. Oh, yeah. My God, that's sort of the most wonderful discussion ever. But it was fun. They were fun guys. And wind chill, man. Serious stuff. Here's a just from last hour, entitled Little Green Man. We need a breakdown of U.S. delivered ass kicking of them in Syria. If you will recall a few months ago, some little green Russian men with tanks and artillery tried to overrun a special operations base reinforced by Marines. And the United States killed somewhere between 200 and 400 Russians. But the story hasn't got out because the SEALs weren't involved in it. Delta Force was. And so nobody knows what happened. See, that's what happens when the SEALs aren't involved in shit. It doesn't become a movie. Nobody knows what the fuck happened. So I don't know. I know some people that know, but they're not talking. So anyway, but yeah, that would be kind of that. I saw some stories about that, but anyway. Yes.
I like hearing that.
Yeah, they honestly. So they had tanks and they thought they were going to overrun. Oh my God! The worst thing you could do, well, the greatest favor you could do an American force is pull people together, throw some tanks in there, and come our direction. We salivate for that shit, man. We spent so much time chasing people to try to kill them, and when you do us a favor and like put everybody together, it's like, oh my God, this is wonderful. Right? So, anyway.
Boys, the water's fine.
I know. Go on in. Let's go. Here's a question for you. Hey, Mac, I have a question about how the chef prepares his grill for the winter. I know you've talked about unpacking it, but what does he leave in the grill? Does he remove everything? I would assume from the grates to the charcoal. Does he bag all that up? Does he box it up, or does he leave it exposed? Wondering what I should do. Now he's a little different because his grill is the gas is wired into that grill, so his is a little bit different. But go ahead.
I shut the grill off, the gas line off. That's number one.
Okay.
Then I have this wire brush that I leave in the grill. That's the only thing that's in. The grates I leave on the grill.
You do?
It's very thick cover that comes with the grill. You pay $100 for it. And I cover the grill, tighten it up, and it's ready for the winter.
Why do you leave the grill? Why do you leave the grates in there, man? It's moisture. It's water. It's temperature changes. Why don't you put them down the garage in the man cave?
No. With this grill cover on, it gets no snow, no moisture in on the grates, and the grates come out the next spring just as dry as when you covered it up.
Really?
That's a fact.
It's an airtight covering. That's interesting.
Yeah, it is
not airtight. Don't even sell that shit to me.
Yeah.
I
look out on top of the grill and there'll be 2.5 feet of snow on top of the grill cover. I have these patio chairs that I do not have to cover.
Well, I mean, come on, man. You're tunned up. You have a gas line that goes to your grill. I mean, the rest of us are not wealthy people. We're just like normal people here looking for friends.
Well, I'm not a wealthy guy. And And that's why I spent money on my patio furniture. You know, that's the way it is.
That's the way it is? That's what you're giving me? That's the way it is, Mac? All right.
That's the way, no, that's the way I, Beth and I roll. You know, we're on the second floor. It's stupid to try and take my grill downstairs to the garage.
No, just the grates, because they're metal, and your grill covering really is not airtight. I don't know if you know that, but I was joking to see if you would bite on that, and you did. Yeah, it's airtight. It's not airtight.
But it works.
But it
works for me.
All right. Well, that's what's important, right? When you're a hippie, you can get out of shit by saying stuff like that. Now, let's talk about how much the Dodgers suck. Okay? Now, the Yankees got beat, right? And that's okay, because that little Altuve son of a bitch, I don't think that ball's come down yet, okay? And you could lose to that. You're okay with that. The way the Dodgers lost, come on, man. But I will tell you this, neither the Dodgers nor the Yankees have the pitching that either Houston, the starting pitcher in particular, that Houston and Washington have. Washington has four guys that they send to the mound. And if Houston wins a game, they'll be lucky because they pretty much got their spirit broken in game two of that series.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, they're making errors. They look like a shitty softball team.
It was amazing. Because of Houston's hitting,
yes,
you just never know. They're never out of it. But Washington looked pretty damn good in the national championship series by sweeping they look good now.
Oh my god, good. Well, let me tell you, there's that old thing, right? You know, good pitching gets good hitting out, and it's been that way forever. The other thing that I grew up hearing was this. I remember my dad talking about guys like Tom Seaver and Don Sutton, who pitched for the Dodgers. Seaver pitched for the Mets and the Reds. My dad said, if you don't get them early, if you don't get them early, you won't get them. Because when they settle in, they're too good. And so you've seen it in both, like Strasburg gave up two runs in the first inning. And so did Verlander. And then they just locked the whole thing down for the next, seven, eight innings. It was zeros. And just in fact, I used Tom Seaver in my post-traumatic winning presentation as a form of meditation that he used to do. He came, Tom Seaver, Hall of Fame pitcher for the Mets, right? Tom Terrific, the original Tom Terrific, when he was this good-looking young guy, pitched it. He was in the Marine Corps. He's from Fresno, California. Joined the Marine Corps when everybody had to serve during Vietnam. And then I'll tell you a funny Marine story about Tom Seaver. And then went on to greatness with the Mets and the Reds. And then he became a broadcaster for the Mets. And now I think he either has Alzheimer's or dementia, which is sad. And I just saw his wife, Nancy, who's beautiful. And I saw her doing a special about his career. But anyway, Marine Corps story about Tom Seaver. I didn't know Tom Seaver was in the Marine Corps. So my dad's managing the Reds. And I think I'm in college at the time, probably 1980, 81 time frame. And the Reds come to play the Padres. So I go down to see my dad after I get out of school. He's down at Jack Murphy Stadium. And so, he tells, the security people, hey, my son's coming. And, will you send him down to the clubhouse? Like, I'm just going to go see my dad at work. So it happens to be at a baseball stadium. So we're sitting in his office shooting the shit. And I know the coaches. I know some of the players. And so I'm sitting in his office down in the bowels of Jack Murphy Stadium. And I hear this. And I'm like, what is that? Now, I'm not in the Marine Corps. I don't even have a thought about joining the Marine Corps. And my dad goes, oh, my God, Sieber and Bill Fisher. Fisher, a former Marine. They went down. They went down to the recruit depot this morning. Oh my God, Seaver's not going to be the same for a week. Every time he does this, he loses his mind for a week. And if you look at pictures, and so they come walking in, and they had T-shirts, and they're yelling stuff, it was, and everybody's laughing. But Seaver wore his hat like a Marine when he wasn't pitching, and he wore it like he would wear his hat with the bill down over his eyes. Which is the way Marines wear their covers. But the meditation story, so I talk about, in post-traumatic winning, I talk about you have to learn how to meditate. Now, as Marines, we got to come up with a different fucking name because we cannot call it meditation. We have to find something like combat mind clearing, okay? So, when the gunny walks out the door and says, what are you doing? Like, I'm meditating. The response is, come here, sunshine. Come with me, right? But if he looks at you and he says, "What are you doing?" And you say, "I'm combat mind clearing, guy." All right, you keep what you're doing. What you're doing? What are you doing, Holmes? Yeah, come with me. So we got to come up with a different name. But right, when you look at guys like LeBron James or Michael Jordan, and you see them doing it in the game, and the reason they're doing it right is to clear their head so they can function at a higher level in compressed times, high stress situations. What does that remind you of? Let me think. Oh, it might be combat operations, whether real or in training. And the problem that military people have is, you know, if you're a civilian, you go out to your car. Right? You can turn on the music. You can go to your happy place. You can go for a walk. Well, in the military, you may not have that option. Right? And so what you have to have it in your pocket. And that's why meditation is important. Now, and again, when I think of meditation, I think of Rafiki and the Lion King, right? Simba, you don't even know who you are. Right? And it doesn't have to be like that. That's why we need to shit can the whole word meditation. And so my story about Tom Seaver in post-traumatic winning is this. You know, I used to watch him pitch for the Reds, and he was really good. And he would, when he would give up a home run, right, the umpire would throw the next ball out to him. Because the last one went over the fence. He would take it, catch it, and he'd walk to the back of the mound. He'd turn his back to the plate, and he'd rub the ball up, right? And he'd be standing there, and then you'd see him take this big breath, and then you'd see him, like, blow it out.
Yeah.
And, and he would, like, and then he'd turn around, and he'd get up on the mound. And so one day I said, hey, can I ask you this question, Tom? And he said, yeah. And I said, when you actually give up a home run, you go to the back of the mound, what are you doing? He said, well, first of all, I'm pissed, okay? And I know my team needs me to perform at a high level for us to win. So what I learned to do was go back there, right, and to clear my mind. And so, but what helps me is I take that breath in, and when I exhale like that, I blow that thought and all of that shit out of me. And when I turn around, it's a blank slate. I'm completely focused on this hitter. And I flushed everything that just happened.
Yeah.
Now, that's a form of meditation, right?
That's a good lesson.
Well, and I think what helps, though, is physically blowing it out. Like, all right, I'm done with that. Like, what's next? And you know, you could think that, but I think it's a little bit different. There might be more relief in it. And I mean, as ridiculous as that might sound, I think that's how the human mind works. You know, that I just got rid of that. All right, what's next? And so I share that. So when I say meditate, right, what I mean is, would you be interested if you found out that Tom Seaver, Michael Jordan, LeBron James, and 95% of the Fortune 500 CEOs do it, right? If it could be a tool that you could use to perform at a higher level as a Marine, as a husband, as a father, right? You know, would that be something you might want to check out? You know, I would say not only yes, but hell yes. So, yeah, Tom Seaver.
That is terrific.
Tom, terrific. And he was pretty good, too. I remember my dad told a story. Do you remember Gary Matthews? He came up with the Giants. He was an outfielder. He played for the Phillies and the Cubs before he retired. And just a good – his nickname was Sarge, but he was a tough, tough baseball player, outfielder. And he came up with the Giants. And I remember my dad was coaching third base for the Giants at the time after the A's fired him. And Seaver's pitching on a night in Candlestick. So it's like 55 degrees. Seaver's throwing it up there.
Yeah, there's –
yeah, Seaver and Candlestick is freezing. Seaver's throwing it up there at about 97 miles an hour when nobody threw that fast, right? And he has incredible command, and he throws a curveball that you can't hit either. So Matthews is hitting, and he gets, gets two strikes on him. And he calls timeout, and my dad's coaching third base, and he walks towards my dad. My dad's like, well, what the fuck does he want with two strikes on him? And so my dad, like, walks up to him, and Matthews looks at him and says, what do I do? And Matthews says, I can't hit either one of his pitches. And my dad says, I don't know. Just swing, and maybe he'll hit your bat. And Matthews looks at him and says, thanks. And he turns and goes back, and Seaver struck him out with a curveball. And but it's right, it's hilarious, like, because the announcer, like, Matthews out of the box, going down to talk to third base coach John McNamara, and like, what do I do?
Swing into the ball, hit the bat.
That's great.
I'll tell you another story. Go to the mound in Cincinnati to take a pitcher out of the game. Get to the mound, right? Got the guy warming up in the bullpen. And the guy who's a rookie looks at my dad and says, you can't bring him in to relieve me. Now, my dad's been in the big leagues at that point for about 14 years, right?
Yeah.
And he managed for probably about 10 of those 14. And he looks, he says, put the ball in my hand and get off this mound right now. And the guy looked at him, and he did it, right? And so next guy comes in, gives him the ball, goes, you know, goes back to the dugout, looks at the pitching coach, Bill Fisher, right? And he says, hey, Fish, go find out what his problem is, right? So Fisher goes into the clubhouse, talks to this kid, right, who's 23, right, at that time, comes back and looks at my dad and says, you're not going to believe it. What? Well, this guy number one, is a year ahead of guy number two in being drafted and coming through the system. Okay? Guy number one, right, who's the relief pitcher, okay, guy number two is the starting pitcher. He goes out with this girl, the Reds farm, the Class A team is in Tampa, right? He goes out with her for the season, and then they break up, right? And then he goes. Guy number two shows up the next year, and he goes out with her, and he marries her, right?
Oh, geez.
All right. Now when they both get to the Reds, guy number two's wife says, I need to tell you something. He says, what? Well, I went out and slept with guy number one.
Oh, Jesus.
What? Yep. So now, when guy number two sees guy number one, he's like, oh! And now guy number one's going to come in and relieve him.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And you're like, what is that conversation? They're having a conversation on the mound. Yeah, well, it ain't about baseball, that's for sure. And, you know, you just look and you shake your head, right? And so, but these things are real. They happen. And just too funny, right? Just too funny. And you know, and then so on the drive home that night, you're like, hey, what was the conversation about the mouth? Oh, geez, listen to this one. Like, are you kidding me? That's awesome. That's awesome.
That's great.
I know.
Gosh, these stories your dad had. Just, I remember when he would come on to the radio show when you were in Grand Forks. I always looked forward to it.
I used to wire brush him. I predicted Aaron Boone's home run off Tim Wakefield. I said that would happen. I didn't predict Boone would hit it, but we were talking about Wakefield as a relief pitcher. I said, I don't like that. He said, well, you know, he's got a pretty good record. I said, look, one of those knuckleballs goes straight, it takes one swing, and the whole thing's over. And that's one of my favorite highlights, because if you watch that, you could see, like, sheets of beer coming out of the upper deck of Yankee Stadium as people just launch their beers, right? And there's, in baseball, there's this, like, there's this jump in the noise level. When it comes off the bat, you hear this, everybody go, and then when they see it go over the fence, it goes to another level. And it happened the other night in Houston when Altuve hits that home run. That ball comes off his bat. You hear that crack, and then you hear this two-phase, and it's just pandemonium breaking loose. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, I used to love my dad would give it. My dad would come on my radio show, right, and he would give his opinion about something. And I would say, that's bullshit. You don't know what you're talking about. What?
You are with him really well.
What? I'm like, yeah, that's bullshit. He's like, look, the only reason I'm on this show is because you're my son, and yeah. So anyway, here's a question. Sanders ? Good morning, guys. Mac, why was Kim's restaurant called Sanders? Did he keep the name from the former owner, and did he ever consider changing the name? Have a great day, Dave. Dave from Vacaville, who's in Nashville.
Oh, okay, Dave. Here's the skinny.
Here's the skinny.
The building was built by Sander Johnson in 1907. Sander Johnson was my partner Bob Evenson's wife's grandfather, and it was the first building he built when he came over from Sweden. And so when they were researching the building, and Linda found out that it was her grandfather that built the building in 1907, and there's a wrought iron up there that says 1907 on it, so they called it Sanders 1907 in honor of her grandfather, and that's why
Sanders. And Kim, people used to, I thought his name was Kim Sanders. Well, you know,
yeah.
Kim.
Oh, I call Kim Sanders all the time. Mr. Sanders, he's not alive anymore. Kim Holmes.
Yeah.
Now, you have to be respectful when a restaurant has. I'll tell you something about when I sold Sanders after running it for 30 some years. It was purchased by a guy who wanted to move the restaurant to a building he owned around the corner. And instead of, you know, using the 30-plus years of reputation and history, he changed the name to the new owner and called it Skies. Well, it freaked everybody out. They thought, Skies? What are you, nuts? and sure, it was not a popular choice.
Well, I mean, and Kim and I talked about that. I mean, if you're going to pay, right, for the rights to somebody's joint, what you really want, you know, and I think, you know, truth be told, in retrospect, one, they didn't want you to stay in business or somebody else to buy it. So, but what you do is you buy that goodwill, and you buy right, that stream of money that goes into that. And, like, you can move the restaurant and you can, you know, redecorate it, but you want to keep, when something's so established like Tim's was, it would seem, it always seemed to me that you would want to keep a lot of the menu, you know, do whatever you want with the joint, because that's, in my opinion, that's secondary, because you're paying for that goodwill that's been generated over the course of, how many years were you in business?
Oh, 33 years?
Yeah. As the best restaurant between Minneapolis and Seattle, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, it's just fact. It's just a fact. And so, I mean, there. If you've never heard this, listen to this shit, okay? All right? Now, I'm not going to ruin it by telling Kim what I'm going to play, but... let me just play you something. I'll tease it while I'm looking for it. Dennis Miller came to North Dakota to do his little comedy thing, right? So he was going, you know, he's Dennis Miller, big time comedian. At the time, he'd either just given up, The Late Show, or what show did Dennis Miller do?
He had his own show.
Yeah, the Dennis Miller Show, right? On one of the networks. And so, Dennis Miller coming to his comedy routine. I always thought Dennis Miller, he was, you know, it started out on Saturday Night Live. He was always a funny guy. And everybody went to, you know, to see, you know, what Dennis Miller, you know, had to say. And so he gets up on stage, right? And so here's 41 seconds of Dennis Miller.
There were 10,000 people there.
Yeah. So he gets up and he starts to do his routine. And listen to this.
Ladies and gentlemen, round.
Thank you. Well, I have to tell you, folks, sitting on quite a little secret up here. Oh, and by the way, Sanders, one of the best restaurants I've eaten at in the last 10 years of my life. Huh? Have you been down to that joint? I just had an astounding meal there, and I actually paid, so you know this is sincere.
Yeah, so that's Dennis Miller bust into his thing about Kim's joint, right? That joint Sanders. I actually paid for it. So, I'm sitting there watching it going, holy shit. You can't pay enough for stuff like that. And, it was awesome. And so I don't know. Again, it was always a mystery to me why you know, people that bought it did not, you know, trade on did not trade on Kim's goodwill. And so it was a bit of a mystery, to be honest with you.
And they're probably who knows that the guy that who named it after himself. He's since passed away, but he couldn't handle it. It was too much for him.
It was too much for him. It's, you know what I mean? Sad.
Very sad.
I mean, he had worked for Kim forever.
20 years. 20 years.
Yeah. But you know what? There's and we've talked about this relative to other things. Things like you can, being a number two guy is different than being a number one guy, right? Being two is make it work. Being the number one guy is you're the yes or no guy. And that's a different gig. And, you know, we talked about this. The woman who became mayor of Kim's City, where I used to live, Grand Forks, was the mayor. She'd been the mayor's assistant for like 30 years. And so she knew everything. She knew where all the bodies were buried. She knew how the game got played. And then they had a flood. And making everything work is a different skill than being the person at the top saying yes and no. And she had a tough time. And, I mean, she looked back, even when you would interview her subsequent to it, and they moved out of there. She and her husband moved to Florida. And she'd come back on occasion. But when she talked about it, you could hear the pain in her voice. You know, because it was not only difficult times, but it was difficult for her because that's not what she did. She took, in her life, she took like a couple of bad pieces and she made it work. And I think that was all good and affirming. And she was one of those people that, you know, Pat, you know, she knows how to do it. But when it's different when you're the person saying yes or no and other people depend on you. And, yeah. You know, and the guy who bought Kim's restaurant, you know, struggled with that and ultimately passed away. And the stress, I mean, the stress, you know, that came with all of that, instrumental in his death, yes?
Yeah, it is, but it's how you approach that stress. I pretty much loved what I did. It was a way of life. And yes, there were times when I was stressed, but it didn't overwhelm me. I just, you know, I just loved being there every day, getting up and going to work. It was an adventure. And yes, you always have stress in whatever job you do, but you take it, use it to your advantage and figure out how to deal with things.
Yeah, but again, not everybody, right? Not everybody has that skill set. You know, not everybody takes that kind of pressure in stride. And so it looks like it. Well, I've done this my whole life. Yeah, but you've never been on the hook for payroll, right?
Yeah.
You don't know. You don't know. All those people depend on you to pay them, right? And that means you got to manage this thing right. That means you got to, you know, any of the financial surprises that happen, you've got to navigate that, and you better have good bankers that can help you in a pinch. And so, you know, the quarterly taxes, all the shit that you have no idea of, right, when you're the number two guy, all of a sudden fall into your lap.
Yeah. And it falls into his lap. It fell into his lap with a thud.
Right.
And so he just thought that he could just schmooze his way through it. But that's not how it rolls.
Well, and I think she thought the same thing that, you know, but again, you find out when you're in the corner office, when you're the yes or no person, that is a different gig. That is not a staff job. That is not make it work person. That is the yes or no person. And that is a completely different job description. And not everybody can do it. Here's another one. Mac, I heard Kim talk about he didn't understand why they took walleye off the menu. Could he go over briefly how he prepares his walleye? I don't think I've heard that before.
Oh, that's a good one. And that's one of the dishes that Hal wants on his menu.
Hal loves walleye.
You take the walleye. It's frozen. It comes from Canada. And you take... It's got the skin on one side, and the tip, you break it a little bit, and you run it under hot water when it's frozen, and then you go down towards the head, or where the head was, and the skin peels right off. And it's still frozen, but the hot water separates the skin from the flesh, And then you put it in the fridge until it thaws. Now, when you're making the walleye, where the skin was, you know, it's patted dry. It's sitting on your prep paper or in a dish. You dust it on that side, the skin side. You dust it with, you put white pepper and salt on your fish. And then you take one drop. Because the fish, the salt and pepper will stick to the fish a little bit, still, you know, moist. The Wondra, if you don't know what Wondra is, it comes in a little, in your grocery store, a little blue tube. It's a very fine grain flour, enriching, for making gravies. I used it for walleye, and I just dusted one side. And then I take it up, and I shake any excess off, and then I have in a cast iron skillet some olive oil, it was called pomace oil, which is the last pressing of the olive oil, which is the low end of the olive oil. It's more cooking olive oil, and it's cheaper. And then I will lay the flour end down gently from the head to the tail into the olive oil. And it will cook, and when the brown edges start to crisp up, then I turn it over and take it off the burner and put a lid on top of the pan, the cast iron skillet. And because it's cast iron, that olive oil is still as hot as it was when it was burning. And for about 2 minutes, it'll finish cooking. And then you take the lid off. You pull that out with a pair of tongs or a spatula. You set it on a paper towel and drain any excess oil. And then there you go. And I served it with the beurre blanc, which is a butter and white wine reduction sauce. Or if you just want plain tartar sauce, you can do that. And that's it. That's how I cook my walleye.
Let me ask you a question. If you were going to glitz up tartar sauce to make it better, what would you do? How would you make it better? For instance, I like a little bit more dill pickle in tartar sauce. So dice up some chunks of dill pickle.
Absolutely.
And put that in there.
Some people like it sweet, with sweet pickle. I prefer a kind of a dill, like a kosher dill, not too dill, but still dill. And you dice that up real fine, mix it in with your mayonnaise and whatever. You could put sriracha in there to give it a little heat. I mean, just a pinch, because it goes a long way.
Right.
And it'll turn the mayonnaise kind of pink if you put too much. So, then a little lemon juice. You can dice up some green onions real fine and mix it in there and perk up your tartar sauce.
I like that. One of the things Kim is, you know, I've said this before, he's taught me is, you know, take your base dish and then glam it up. Do some tricks with it, and you'll have a variation of to include, like, you know, normal sauces. For instance, if you take horseradish sauce and sour cream, you know, Patrick is still does that, and you mix that together. It's much better than just horseradish sauce. Yeah, Patrick doesn't eat a steak without that now.
Yeah, but
I think he carries a.
You can't eat this straight up. We talked about this last week.
Right.
I mean, or a couple of weeks ago. It burns your nostrils. I mean, you just kills your taste buds. So it's nice to mix it with a little sour cream.
Well, first of all, horseradish sauce is a little bit more, you know, is milder, but the taste of the sour cream combined with the horseradish sauce is delicious. Absolutely delicious. And on a steak, and it's one of those things. It's easy to do, tastes awesome, it's good. And so, but just those little flourishes on a normal meal, take a normal meal and make it absolutely, you know, positively delicious.
Now, with my walleye, I would serve it with the beurre blanc sauce. I would run it from across the middle of the fish, and it would kind of pool on one side, and then I'd put fish lips on. And what I would do, and where the head was, I would take two thin, very thin slices of red bell pepper, and I'd make like a little smile, like fish lips. And then I'd take a slice of black olive that's got the circle with the hole in the middle, and put it where the eye was. And people seemed to love that. and we caught it. Don't forget the fish lips. Yeah.
How funny.
It's a nice presentation.
You know,
that's everything.
I know. You do all this work, right, to do great stuff, and then you get all these great comments about the stupid, like, lips on the fish. Like, okay, like, this is pissing me off, right? And, you know, it's like I would go, you know, and now I understand it, but before, you know, you do all this radio, and you try to provide quality content and good programming, right? And, you know, when I was in the business of taking calls, and nobody calls, and then you do something stupid, and then all of a sudden your phones like blow up and you're like, are you kidding me? Like, I do stupid radio and now I've got all these people that want to talk to me. I do quality radio and I got nobody. And that's the way it is. That's the way it is. And, but it's funny. It's funny. And, but you know, you can't take it too much to heart, because you'll get your little heart broken. Right? You'll get your little heart broken. Here's another one. Mac, that's a great idea. Does he have any other things that he does with condiments? Let's go down the list. Does he add anything to his ketchup? Does he add anything to his mustard? And what kind does he use? So, Kim, if you were gonna you know, sexy up ketchup, what would you do with it?
Oh, you can dice up mince, which is finer than dice. You can mince up jalapenos and throw it in the ketchup. You can add sriracha with the ketchup if you like it spicy, or you add mayonnaise and you got Thousand Island.
Yeah. No, I mean, but more than little people like that. More than a few people like that mix of a little bit of mayonnaise with your ketchup. And
I do it all the time.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan. That's Kathleen used to do that with and make her own Thousand Island dressing when we ran out. She'd mayonnaise, ketchup, and would she put a little bit of vinegar in there? I don't know if I recall.
Vinegar, you can put sweet pickle relish, and in you can dice onions, real fine, red onions or white, yellow onions, whatever you prefer. The red onions are a little milder, generally speaking. And
all right, let's go to mustard. If you were going to do anything to mustard, first of all, what kind of mustard do you buy?
I usually like, there's a couple of mustards I like. I like Grey Poupon. That pretty much stands on its own because that has been made with white wine and has a little tang to it. I like to take, any kind of mustard. I can take that or, brown mustard. We used to get a ballpark mustard in Crosley Field. That was like a brown mustard. And, it took me years to find that. And it only comes in gallons. 4 gallons to a case.
What's that? What was the name of the mustard?
Oh, geez, I can't remember. It's been so long. You can add a little horseradish to the mustard to spice it up. I like to do that with any mustard. Your favorite mustard, pretty much. It could be a brown mustard. It could be French's yellow mustard. It doesn't matter. I've added a little bit of mayo. Is a wonderful thing to add to condiments that gives it a surprising look.
Hey, listen to this. Crosley Fields spicy mustard.
Yeah.
The topping, those Cincinnati sausages, was one of the most beloved products in the region. The spicy brown mustard served as at its concessions. The Cincinnati Reds chose, is it Weber's mustard? R-O-E-B-E-R's? Weber's mustard?
Yeah.
And the mustard is still used today.
It's the best mustard in the world.
How funny is that?
Or bologna.
That is awesome. Crosley Fields, the internet's amazing. It's amazing the shit that you can find. Crosley Fields spicy mustards.
How do you spell that?
Now I'm looking. This another article. In Cincinnati, our brands have longevity. In many cases, our brands outlive the founding company, and Cincinnati consumers are extremely brand loyal. The loyalty amps up when you talk about ballpark food. Crosley was a magical place for generations of Cincinnatians and Reds fans. Heck, we invented professional baseball in 1869, and our Cincinnati Red Stockings, when the older Cincinnatians waxed nostalgic about old Crosley Field, they fondly remember food and drink they enjoyed at the park. Imagine smelling the fresh roasted peanuts that peanut Jim Shelton sold in his cart, buttered popcorn, the smell of 5-cent cigars, and roasting sausages. Over the years, fans could guzzle a Hauk, H-A-U-K, H-A-U-C-K, shelling Wiedemann, Bavarian, Burger, Hootie, or Bruck's beer with their dog or their brat.
Hootipole. Wiedemann's and Schenley were the beers made in Cincinnati by Germans.
Topping those Cincinnati sausages was one of the most beloved products. The special spicy brown mustard served its concessions. The holy condiment was made exclusively for Crosley Field by a local Frank Tea and Spice Company. It was a combination of their brown mustard, their brown Dusseldorf style mustard, and their Frank's Red Hot, the same cayenne pepper sauce that was used to create the original buffalo wing sauce in 1964. Frank's Crosley Field spicy mustard wasn't available to the consumer, but they also made a spicy brown product called Mr. Mustard that was. The Frank Tea and Spice Company was founded in Cincinnati in 1896 by German-Jewish immigrant Jacob Frank. He saw a niche in bringing smaller shelf-sized packages of whole and ground spices to the consumer. They expanded into sauces, mustards, and jumbo brand peanut butter. This is too funny. Then it gives the Cincinnati the history of mustard at Riverfront Stadium. How funny! So there you have it. Kim still remembers it, going and having it. That's amazing. You want to know where the first place I had spicy mustard was? At Candlestick Park. And Candlestick, my mom, Corporal Punishment Kathleen, I mean, we had this ritual. You could get something to eat in the fifth inning, and then you could get a snack in, like, the seventh inning. Or the fourth and the seventh, maybe. That's how Kathleen did it.
Yeah.
But in Candlestick, you would go and you would get hamburgers, and by the time you got to your seat, the things were frozen.
Yeah.
Yeah, when it was cold, man. It was brutal. So we eat them fast. But that's the first place I had Goulden's spicy spicy brown mustard. And I became a fan then, and I still, hot dogs with spicy brown mustard on them. Now it's Grey Poupon, but it's absolutely delicious.
The spicy brown mustard.
Yeah.
The Grey Poupon with my hot dogs.
Yeah. No, I can taste it before I eat it, which is always good. All right, you got any big plans for the weekend? You and Miss B going to do anything exciting?
Sue on TV tonight. They have Bemidji State in town for the weekend.
Oh.
Playing pretty good. They tied and lost to Mankato State, the number two team in the country last week.
What is going on? How is Mankato better than UND now? What the fuck?
They're in an inferior. I don't know. It's just. They're in the old WCHA.
Is the world upside down? Are you kidding me? Come on, man.
You just watch the Sioux this year. They're gonna come on.
Well, they better, because I'm not happy. I am not used to this, like, losing and tying to Mankato. Like, are you kidding me? Like, what is going on? Is Mankato out recruiting us?
No, I don't think so. I just think that, you know, a lot of Minnesota kids go to Mankato. I don't know why. They've been pretty good the last couple of years. You know how when kids grow up together and they all go to the same school?
Yeah, I'm not buying it. UND is too big, too powerful, too good for too long, right, to be this.
They'll be back in the front rows.
This subpar for this long, okay? And I don't know if this is the second year. And I know what happens is when you deal in high-end guys and sometimes a couple of them leave a year early, right, then you're screwed because you don't have other guys who committed, blah, 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 blah. I got all that, but I'm not happy. I just want you to know. Make a prediction. Do you have a wager on the World Series?
Matter of fact, I have a wee one.
A what?
A wee wager, and I did take the Washington Nationals over Houston with my friend Disco.
Disco. And,
yeah.
Who picked? Did you pick or did Disco pick?
I've got him on the ropes, but you never know about Houston. You know, both teams are. I thought the pitching would be the difference.
Oh, it is. Trust me. What's amazing though, is how Verlander and Cole got beat up in both their efforts. Late in the game, they got beat up, and the Astro bullpen came in and had been pretty good most of the year, but they fell apart in the game too. But when you look at the series, it's like, okay, we got to win four games, so we've got to beat those guys at least once to win. If it goes seven games, right? Our guys hold serve, their guys hold serve. Somebody got to break somebody in one game. And Washington, who's had the worst drought ever, and the worst luck in the playoffs, goes home game three tonight up 2-0. So we'll see what happens. And then, you know, I saw Bryce Harper. And much
got to win two games to have a chance at winning the World Series in Washington.
In Washington, good luck to them. They'll need it. But the much has been made about Bryce Harper, you know, who played with Washington for years, and you know, one of the best players in baseball, signed the biggest contract in Major League Baseball last winter, and now he leaves the team, and now they're on the verge of winning the World Series. And you know, there might be lessons in that. You know, there might be lessons in that when you have that much money locked up in one person. I don't know that you can pay the other people enough around them, unless you're a unique franchise that has deep pockets, to get there. But he did something. He said, look, I just want everybody to know, I could not be more happy for the city of Washington, you know, all the guys who I played with and came through the minor leagues with that are playing for the Nationals, you know, the front office people. I hold no ill will to anybody. You know, I know people are mad at me because I left, but you know what? It's a business, and sometimes those things happen. And I just want everybody to know how happy I am for everybody. And I thought that was pretty classy event, pretty classy thing to do from a young guy.
Yeah, that's very good to do.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be a good game tonight. That's for sure.
Well, let's hope so. Let's hope so. All right, my friend. Thank you very much for the visit. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
And congratulations on your new gig. Tell Hal I said hi.
I will do that. You bet I will.
Hey, and if he, I would tell him, I don't know if he's still involved in the community that much anymore, but if he is, I'm going to, I didn't tell you this, but I'm going to begin to do this with the Las Vegas Fire Department. So it's the first first responder organization that will do it in the country. And it will open up a huge door, and they're extremely excited. One of my former Marines is up there as one of their battalion chiefs, and so he and I have been talking, and he's opened, got a few doors to open, and we're going to go through them. I would love to come up to Grand Forks and do it, and I don't know if Hal can put me in touch with the right people to make that happen, but I would love to talk to him about it.
I will talk to him about it.
Because
tell him what you do. Yeah. We're going down Tuesday to have a tasting.
Nice. We love tasting.
For steaks.
Got it.
And, so I'll talk to him about it, and then I'll give you a call when I do.
All right. First of all, thank you very much as always, and have a great weekend.
You too.
There you have it.
Go Nat.
The one and only.
Both rooting for the Nationals.
I don't care. I love to see great baseball. I was even pissed when Altuve hit that home run. I made a note that Chapman got beat on the second best pitch. But you know what, Altuve, you give yourself a chance to win. LeMahieu hits that big home run, and high drama in the postseason. That frame by frame agony. And then another great baseball player, hits a home run. I mean, you can't be pissed. It's just the way it works. So, I love watching high-end, great, dramatic stuff. And baseball is great theater this time of the year. So, anyway, looking forward to it. All right, Kimmy, have a good one.
You too. Take care, buddy.
You bet. Pete Kimble Holmes here on a Friday edition of All Marine Radio. That'll do it if you're just tuning in. Talk about... Again, I hope you don't get sick of it. And I just want to encourage you, right? Download those 3 goals and 9 commandments to your phone, and every chance you get, touch somebody's life. And pretty soon you're going to have this little network like I have. Obviously, I have a bigger network, and I go speak publicly. But let me tell you, word of mouth will spread through your friends that, you can help people. And then all of a sudden, somebody's calling you and say, hey, I have a friend. Could you talk to them? And because as I say, on a nauseating basis, I'm sure, happens to me all the time. And happened to me multiple times yesterday. So have a great weekend. All Marine Radio Expeditionary next week. We'll be here on Monday at Studio One and Expeditionary for about the next week after that. Colorado, Northern Virginia, and then Minnesota. And then I think I've got to make a stop in Sacramento as well, so I'm excited about that. Anyway, on a Friday, have a great weekend. Keep changing people's lives, right? Keep changing people's lives. More of All Marine Radio coming up next. Right here on your home for it. The All Warrior Radio Network. It's on a Friday. I am over and out.